1 Timothy 5. These keys were found in the parking lot. They look like they go to like a master lock or a padlock or security box or something like that. They're found in the parking lot on Sunday. So if you find yourself with a padlock you don't have the keys to, I'll put them upstairs on the desk and you can find them up there. Gonna sneeze. All right, 1 Timothy chapter 5. I want to look at a topic that doesn't often get discussed, but over the last several months, the deacons can affirm this for you. I have been particularly burdened about our care as a church of widows. And in our business meeting on Wednesday, which is, I guess I should announce that, next Wednesday is our business meeting, our quarterly business meeting, I will have a couple of proposals for you in ways in which we may better fulfill the command to take care of our widows. I've been very, I wouldn't say very burdened, but it's just something that the Lord has continued to bring to my heart and make me aware of and challenge me around if we're doing all that we need to be doing. And so I want to share some of that with you tonight. In anticipation of our meeting together next Wednesday. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Let's just read. I'm going to start in verse 1, and we'll read through verse 10, and we can walk through this passage and its teaching on widows. Rebuke not an elder. Here the word elder is older person. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren. Number 2, the older women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. Honor widows that are widows indeed. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. And these things give in charge, that they may be blameless. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith, and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. And so here we have an introduction, instruction from Paul to Timothy on the proper care of widows. Of course, in verse number 3, we see the command, and that says, honor widows that are widows indeed. Psalm 68, verse 5 says that God is a father to the fatherless and a judge of the widows. A lot of times we read that word judge and we think negative, right? Standing before a judge always sort of bears this negative context. In this particular context in Psalms where he says a father to the fatherless and a judge to the widows, it's that idea that God will extend great mercy and has grace, long-suffering for widows, and has a special place, I believe, in his heart and in his judgment for widows. Psalm 146 in verse 9 says, the Lord preserveth the strangers, he relieveth the fatherless and widow, but the way of the wicked he turneth upside down. I love how it says he relieveth, means he delivers, he helps, he aids. One of the things that's so important for us to understand is the cultural context that 1 Timothy was written in. Of course, we know that this was written during the first century, and times of the first century were very different than the 21st century. Right? Things are very, very different today than they were, than the way that they were in the first century. This is really important for us to understand and to not read our context into the Bible. Rather, we want to take what the Bible says out. Okay? We want to make sure that we're not putting things into the Bible, but rather we are learning from it. So the first century, of course, was a very patriarchal society. And the idea, as you will notice, often the verses that I just read to you refer to the fatherless. Okay, this would be a male figure, the father, the provider, the protector, the caretaker. Women, of course, played a very different role in that culture and time than they do today. Very, very different. A woman without a man was truly lost, was in a desperate case, unable truly to work, provide for herself, unable to, you know, just provide in the marketplace or something like that. There was it was a very, very different set of circumstances. And that's why throughout even this writing, you'll see the emphasis of the lack of a male figure. Notice in verse number 4, it says, but if any widow have children or, what does it say? Nephews. Why nephews? Because they're male, right? You have a male figure who's part of your family who can help provide for you and sustain for you. The other reality was that it was impossible for women to own property. It was impossible for women to be able to maintain or retain their home unless there was some special provision. Okay? Very common for a husband to die and the wife literally to go home, pack up what she had, and move out immediately. If there was, you know, any sort of negative circumstances, or if the husband in some way didn't provide or set up something, if her family wasn't willing to, you know, step in and help and aid in other ways. This was, very dire set of circumstances. And so Paul rightly says to Timothy, you're the pastor of the church at Ephesus now, Timothy, and you need to make sure that as a church body, you're paying special attention to the widows that are among you, for they are truly helpless. Okay. They're not able to really properly care for themselves. And that's why when he says here at the end that our widows indeed, and that leads us from the commands to take care of widows to the criteria. And he says, widows indeed. And then he says in verse 4, if any widow have children or nephews. So that's sort of, you know, again, extended family, immediate family or extended family. Let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents. This is instruction to the children or nephews, right? In order to show honor to them, they would take care of those that were in their own home, that were a part of that. And that's obviously a requirement for them. And Paul says, for that is good and acceptable before God. Meaning it's good for the next one in the house to provide for and care for and make sure that they are taken care of. Now, this first century culture never imagined families spread out across the face of the globe, right? When a young man got old enough to marry, he would be engaged, he'd pay the dowry, and then for the next several months, he would build an addition onto his father's house. Okay, he would add some space on, and then he would go and get his wife and would bring her home, leaving mom and dad on the girl's side, and would come to live in his house, which was attached to his parents' house and brother's house, right? And you'd have quite an expanse there. And so the idea here is with these children or these nephews would be those that would be a part of the house. When we think of this, we think of we think of it in our own way, right? Paul never imagined a family where you have a son in California and a nephew in New York and right, like all of these places. But yet that's kind of our reality, right? So we have to, I think, make sure we understand the confines of what he's talking about. The first criteria that Paul states is in verse 3 where he says, widows indeed. Widows indeed. The two criteria I see here are indeed and in need. I thought that was pretty cool how that worked out. But notice Paul says, widows indeed twice. He says it in verse 3 first, but then he says, now she that is a widow indeed. It's interesting. This isn't just a filler word added by the translators to make a smoother English. This is actually, you know, a word that is purposefully used by the Apostle Paul here, and in the Greek carries the idea of, you know, certainly or authentically, one that is truly a widow. And that a widow truly would be someone who does not have a male provider in her home, whether in her immediate home or in her extended home. Okay? It would simply mean someone who doesn't have a male provider in her home. That would essentially be the first requirement. She would be considered by Paul a widow indeed. And then it says, of course, in need. Let's read verse 5. Now, she that is a widow indeed and desolate. That means desperate. Right? It means someone who is all alone and unable to provide for themselves. Desolate. Trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. This is a woman who, obviously, her husband has died. She is left alone. Right? So there's an emotional burden. But then there's also the financial and the physical burden of, now I am without my provider and my caretaker and my protector. Now, here I am. And this woman, given the dynamics of the first century, which we truly cannot understand, was in a desperate position. She was in a desperate position. If someone, some man, didn't step forward and offer her protection or help or care or provision, she was truly desolate. Right? She was in a desperate situation. And so her response then, because she would be a part of the church, of course, was that she would be continuing in supplications and prayers. What would she be doing? She'd be saying, I'm so desperate here, all I can do is pray. All I can do is ask God to intervene and somehow provide for me and protect me. And what will I eat? And where will I stay? And I'm in a, this is a desperate situation that I'm in. It's important for us to see that. Verse 6, but she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. This idea of this is when we think pleasure, we think like, I don't know, something different, I think, than what's being trying to be communicated here. This is obviously a woman who has lost her husband. And the idea of pleasure is better, I think, rendered or understood for us as like one that lives comfortably, meaning her husband or another provider that has stepped forward, has come forward and has either you know, planned ahead for this circumstance. His family has perhaps some provision for these types of things. The uncle or nephew, like we are talking about, has said, you know, we are going to take care of you and are going to provide for you. When we see pleasure, we don't mean like her husband died and she went and bought a red convertible. You know what I mean? Like, she went on a cruise and bought a convertible and, you know, let the lawn grow or something like that. Like, I don't know what would be, I don't know what that would look like, but pleasure doesn't quite get that. The idea is that she's provided for. And so she is able to live comfortably, contrasting with the woman who is desolate. Okay? But if any provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than infidel. Interesting, right? This verse gets thrown around a lot. And this certainly doesn't, I mean, it largely, I guess you could apply it to like, hey, if you're a deadbeat father or, you know, husband and doesn't provide for your family, sure, you're a bad testimony and you are publicly denying the faith. But the context of this is really, if your mom is, you know, if your dad dies and your mom is in need, you're to provide for her. And if you don't, you're worse than infidel. If your mother-in-law needs something and you don't provide for her, you are worse than an infidel. That's actually what it means. Not just my family, but my family. Okay? This is a challenge to those And what Timothy would have done here is he would have said, hey, look, you have a son that needs to step forward here, and we need to address this. This would raise to the level of church discipline. This would be something where the pastor or Timothy here, Paul, would say to the son, if they were in the same church, right, you'd say, hey, you need to be stepping up and providing. And the way that would happen is mom would move into the house. Okay, it's not just like, I'll pay for your electric bill or something like that. They would move in. And if he says, no, this isn't going to work for me, right? I'm just not willing to have my mother-in-law live with me. Not going to happen. Okay, then Paul or, the Bible says that that person is denying the faith and is worse than infidel. And from a church perspective, you would go to him, and then you'd go to him with a couple of witnesses, and then you present it before the church. And at some point, if he continued to redo that, you would follow through the whole way, and you would turn him over. So this is serious. This is a really serious thing. It's a very important thing. Verse 9 says, let's just stop there in verse 8. This makes the point. The criteria is a widow in need, and then, of course, a widow indeed. And so both of those fit the criteria that Paul brings out. Paul then mentions to Timothy something that is perhaps a slight nuance that is easily overlooked and perhaps misunderstood. Verse number 9. He says, let not a widow be taken into the number. Into the number. And this idea, the way that this is phrased, you sort of just think, oh, well, maybe it's just like a widow of the church or something like that. But see, there is the idea behind this was that if you had a widow who was truly a widow in need and a widow indeed, and there was really no help or hope for her, what the church would do often is build on their property, on adjacent to their structure, their building, if they had one, or provide something somehow. But they would most often provide something around the place where they would meet. And the widows would actually take up residence there. And they would serve the church. They would essentially, in the number means, coming into full-time service for the church. You know how in Titus, Paul talks about the older ladies visiting younger ladies, right? And do you ever wonder, like, how do older ladies have time to do all that stuff? It's because they literally worked for the church. They would come, they'd live on the grounds, they would be at the church, they would help all around the church, they would serve in the church. For some evidence of this, you remember Acts chapter 6 and verse 1. Do you remember that passage? This was Acts chapter 6 is when the creation of the institution of the deacon. And what was the problem in the gathering that had just started in the early church? It was that the widows of the Grecians were being denied in the daily ministration, right? The daily goings about and the daily activity of the church. Now, I think it could be read a couple of ways. One is that perhaps they were being excluded from getting food. I don't know if that makes total sense. I think what it was that their widows weren't being able to contribute and help in the work of the church. And the Jewish ladies were saying, no. We're the Jews. We do the church stuff, and you guys stay out. Right? And Paul's teaching here is to say, no. Right? We're all going to be part of this, and we're all going to work together in the ministration of the church. And so the deacons were assigned to make sure to help administer the working that was going on around the church body, largely done by the widows. Okay? And so he says here, let not a widow be taken into the number. I call this the calling. I believe that there is perhaps, it's a desperate situation that the Lord ultimately uses for good. The church embraces this woman, and in turn, she embraces the church and becomes a resident figure in the body that is there to help the minister. Their churches functioned very different than ours. Theirs was a daily meeting place. Theirs was one of activity. And I would imagine if we had widows living here and working here, maybe our church would be busier too. Maybe it would be something that would happen. But, you know, theirs was a perhaps a different time and a different need, but that's what the widows would do. And that was perhaps the calling. Now, he says that for these women, there is some specific requirements, though, that go beyond what I think he explains as indeed and in need of the general collection of widows. It seems to me like there is a those that would come in and would dedicate themselves to the church body. He has a little bit of a higher requirement for, which is why I believe these things are separated. It says that, first of all, they should be 80 years old. So they should be at least 60 years old. Now, did this church, I guess I can't say that dogmatically, but chances are this church had widows who were under 60 years old, which is why he said this, right? There were widows of all ages. Remember, the average age of death in the first century was like 30 years old or something like that. It was very low. We think about it again in our age, right? We think of widows all old. But it's true, isn't it, that there are a lot of widows that are much younger. And things happen. Tragedies happen. Imagine the life that they led in that time. Death was much more prevalent than it is for us today. Thank the Lord for that. And so he says, for those who are going to really be committed and are going to be a part of this number, they need to be 60 years and older. You see, if we just understand this as just the church taking care of widows, and we say, well, sorry, widows, you have to be 60 plus in order for the church to help you. Right? Does that make sense? If I were to pass away and my wife became a widow, I mean, would you guys literally look at her and say, you're not 60, we can't help you? Would you? No. She's coming straight to your house. I just said just exactly what's happening, bud. Settled. You got a basement, you got a little apartment, we're coming over, man. Right? No. So I don't think that you could reasonably say, oh, the church doesn't help widows that aren't 60 years old. That does not make sense. What I think he's calling out here is this specific group of widows. These ladies who would be coming into the church and being a part of the church in a much deeper way, really coming to serve in the church. They need to be 60 years old. Why? Because he explains in verse 11 and following, we won't read it tonight, but essentially the younger widows are going to have that desire to be married again. And it's much more maybe easier for a woman younger than 60 to find a husband and to get married again and then to have responsibilities at home and to be doing what she needs to be doing as a wife and mother and not giving herself to the church. And so this is a very different role that is being described. She needs to be 60 years old. Second of all, it says, having been the husband of one wife. What's that? Yes. I was wondering why you're all shaking your heads at me. I was already thinking about something else. Having been the wife of one man. So does this mean that this woman, she's married at, I mean, probably 15 or 16 years old, something like that here. Her husband is killed in a farming accident. She remarries, lives with this guy for whatever, 40 years. She's now 65. Her husband dies. Does Paul say she can't be used in the church because she's been married twice? But isn't that what it says? Does it say that you can't serve in this regard if more than one of your husbands has died? This is fun.
Sure.
I'm not really looking for a response, I guess. For fear someone would give a better one than what I have in my head. I couldn't handle that. No, I just saying, like, just think about it, right? Like, just is that possible that he's saying that? And I think for us to properly understand it, we need to look, right? So we need to think about this. So it strikes me, first of all, just sort of off the cuff, as like, that may not be what it really means. Like, when I read it, that's what it says. But I'm thinking to myself, does that fit with all that Paul is trying to explain here? Look at verse 14. Paul says to he's now talking to the younger widows. He says, I will therefore that the younger woman marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to adversary. Okay, so Paul's instruction to younger widows is for them to remarry. Would his instruction then disqualify them for future service in the church? Would Paul tell them to do something that would ultimately disqualify them? I don't think so. I think what we would understand, and I think the Greek really explains here, and perhaps the way that this could be translated, is being a faithful wife. A one woman man, or one man woman, right? This is a woman. This is speaking to her character, to her reputation, not to her marital status. This is someone who has been a faithful woman. She has been married, yes, but she has faithfully served her husband. She's not known as someone who has been perhaps, you know, out in the community or flirtatious or any of the other, you know, words we could use to describe there. She has a clear reputation as far as her faithfulness to her husband is concerned. And that reading, that understanding syncs perfectly with the next verse. And if you'll notice, there's not a period, but a comma. So Paul's listing these things. The next verse, number 10, well reported of for good works. If she has been brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. All of these are statements of her character and her reputation. She's known as a woman who loves the Lord and serves the body and serves strangers. And right, you're getting a picture of the godliness of this woman that would be entered into the calling, into the group of believers, into this group of widows who would be coming along and serving within the church. I think that this reading, in fact, not to kick a hornet's nest, is used also by Paul in 1 Timothy. If you look at 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse number 2, qualifications for a pastor. Look at verse 2. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife. Same phrase, well, reversed. Again, a list of character traits. So Paul uses the same phrase, right, reversed, but the same wording. And I the best that I can understand this and come to it is not a objective, you've been married once. Rather, you have been a faithful woman to your husband or husbands. You've been a faithful woman. In the same way, I believe that 1 Timothy 3 talks about the character of a man as a pastor, a one-woman man, as a faithful man. Anyways, let's go on. Finally, in verse number 10, of course, we see the example of well reported of for good works. This is someone who is, you know, their reputation goes beyond. And then finally, we have the church. Who's responsible to carry this out? Who's supposed to do this? I'm glad you asked, because it is the U.S. federal government's job to care for the widows. Amen? No? What about the Merrimack County? Are they supposed to care for our widows? Are they the ones that are supposed to do it? They're not, are they? Church is supposed to do it. Now, like I said in the beginning, times are different. And things are different, for sure. And the way that all of this gets applied, I think, today becomes a little harder if we are to take a real hard application. Because I think that determining someone in need or someone in deed is very different for us, right? We can't say to her, we can't say to any of you or a widow today, well, do you have a nephew that lives in your house? Right? Like, we don't live that way. That's not the way that it's set up for us. And so these are things that I think we would have to consider and evaluate. But all of that to say, it is the church's responsibility. Again, Acts chapter 6 and verse 1. The reason why deacons were started were to mow the lawn, change light bulbs, shovel the steps. That's why the apostle said we need deacons. No, to care for the widows. That was the genesis. That was the point, the purpose of it, wasn't it? Right? I'm not making that up. That's what it is. And I'm really convicted that, you know, while I believe our church does I believe we do a very good job of considering our widows, and many of you take time and effort and energy to go and help widows. I mean, I think these are, you know, admirable and wonderful things. I feel that our church as a body is not doing all that we can and should be doing for our widows. Now, I don't know what that looks like. That's going to be for the body to determine what that looks like. But I feel it's my job to tell you that I think we need to be doing more. We need to be thinking about how we might help our widows in a greater way. So Wednesday night, we will talk briefly about the creation of a widow's fund, allocating some of our money and even some of our ongoing funds, just like we do missionaries, to a widow's fund, some percentage that would go to a widow's fund to help care for the necessities, perhaps, of life, the utilities or groceries or housing needs that may arise for a widow that otherwise we can't. Also the care of perhaps the grounds or help in some way. Maybe if there needs to be someone to be paying for plowing or any of those types of things, I don't know, but just raising some thoughts. And then I'd love to start the consideration of, I'm no way making any proposals or asking you to do this at all at this moment, but just to plant the seed of, should we consider putting some sort of housing on the property where we could take care of and house and provide for some of our widows at some stage? Perhaps the house that they're living in is too much, too much for them to care for, but they're not necessarily ready to say, I want to go live in a home. I want to be removed from everybody, right? Instead, could we make them the center of what is happening? And could some of our widows play an important, vital role in our lives if they were more integrated into the work of what we're doing? I don't know the answers to that, and I'm not proposing to know the answers to that, but I'm just saying, is this something that we should be thinking about, considering? It's clear from the Word of God that we are to be doing something. We have a command, the criteria, there's a calling for widows, of course, and then ultimately the responsibility lays at the feet of the church to do that. And so I have been burdened about that. And hopefully next Wednesday we can have a larger conversation about it, but wanted to present it to you all tonight. Okay?